Yeah, sorry for the delay. Wireless issues tonight. But audio should be great.
Woo-hoo!
Audio should be great.
The lesser of two evils, right?
That's it. Welcome to the TLLTS.
That'll work.
It's April 13th, 2 days before U.S. Tax Day. Did you guys finish your taxes already?
Oh, I got my return back already.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You already spent yours.
Yeah.
You spent yours.
I spent mine already. I spent mine a while
it's
ago.
It's in the bank, man. 2 months ago.
Put yours in the bank. We just did ours over the weekend.
Do you owe money?
No, I'm getting like $2,800 back.
And you waited this long in order to get
it? Yeah, we didn't know. I said to my wife, what she said, yeah, we'll probably get like maybe $500 back. And because she didn't work most of last year, you know, didn't make a lot of money, we got a ton of it back.
Awesome.
Which is great. It's exciting. What we're going to do is, for my daughter's birthday, we're looking at buying one of those Linspire laptops.
Ooh.
I was checking those out myself, actually.
Yeah, you know, she's going to be seven.
$500?
From Walmart.
Yeah, she's going to be seven. The little one's going to use it, too. It's something that's probably going to get abused. So we're just going to go, you know,
hey,
get
not,
one of
man?
Those. And I want to see how it works.
It's probably better than my laptop. You have to let me know.
Yeah.
I have to buy one myself, I think.
I look forward to it. But, you know, that's still 2 months off. So I'm kind of holding out as long as I can because right now it's shipping with Linspire 4 something, and I know 5's out, so I'm thinking they're going to probably change it to 5 soon, hopefully.
Is that right. The SEP 300 company from Canada that does those?
No, it's Walmart, man.
Oh, no,
you can get them right from Walmart.
Online or at the store?
Online.
You got to do all that stuff online.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping they might have had a Zandros laptop, but I didn't see those. And they're not. Maybe they'll have the Memphis laptops by then.
They might, yeah. They should have a couple of distributions available.
Hopefully,
the Slackware laptop.
Now that would be cool.
Not at Walmart. Not now. Anytime soon.
Ubuntu laptop. Hooray! Hooray!
Speaking of which,
God. Hooray!
God.
I actually. We'll talk about that later.
Yes.
We'll definitely talk about the Ubuntu upgrade later. But one thing I want to address before we get to our guest tonight is we received an email, or I guess you received an email.
Yes. I'm assuming that you mean you as in me.
You replied and forwarded back.
Yes.
From
yes.
Chris.
Yes.
And I guess, should I read that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Hey, Link.
Anything you guys send us is like subject to us reading on the air.
First, so. Don't shoot me for emailing from a Hotmail account. All right. Just been reading your blog. What kind of donation are you needing for the extra space? We never ask for donations. If you want to send us money, go ahead.
Yeah.
But we never ask for donations.
We'll take it. No, I did mention that on my weblog, though.
What, you're looking for donations?
I said maybe some miracle donation will come in.
Now we're going to have to put up a little PayPal button or something on our page.
Well, no, I was, you know, hoping that somebody wanted to host, like, 900 gigs
you're
of
not looking for. We're not looking for economic.
Well, if we do that, then, you know.
All right.
You have to go down that whole route, yeah.
I'm just going to speak my mind on this. Dump the F in MP3s. Keep the AUGs and the IRC logs. It's got to be time to take a stand on stuff. Maybe you guys can throw together a quick page on why you're only broadcasting in AUG and ways to listen to the show. I just think that it's time for the community to put its money where its mouth is and use a FOSS codec. Same goes for the Lug Radio guys. Those guys suck, but what do you... No, no, that's not it.
They're good guys.
Push the... I like their new episode anyway. Push the envelope. It'll only raise awareness, surely. The Tech Show is a big voice, and I think it can and does do immense good. Ooh, who are they? Who's he talking to? I don't know who these people.
Talking about us?
Yeah.
He's listening to this
show? That must have been the other Tech Show. I bought an iRiver in part because of its AUG support. Don't look down, just jump. Regards, Chris. And you send him a Gmail invite, which is great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, thank you, Chris, for emailing us. This is a pretty touchy issue we've been batting around for some time now. I mean, definitely we want AUG support. We would have liked to had it from the beginning, but we had limitations. Bandwidth limitations,
yes.
Size.
Where the archive is hosted, yeah. We only have so much space that we could put on there. If someone wants to, you know, help us out and donate a little extra,
now what's wrong?
For more bandwidth, then it's cool.
IRC isn't getting recorded. I hope somebody's recording IRC.
I got IRC. All right,
good.
I got it running in two places, so we'll
have to bump this machine. I got nothing.
It's Dan's wireless access point acting kind of strange.
I'll have to reboot my laptop again.
We are at the point now, Link has re-encoded all the old file shows in AUG format.
Yes.
We have AUG format for every single show. We're supporting AUG on every single show now in the future. We're doing MP3 and AUG. It does take up considerable space. I mean, we can get another 3 gigs for $5 a month. The question is, you know... Should we...
Link's fondling his microphone.
Should we
again.
Jump to just strictly AUG support? Alan, what's your opinion?
I like having them both, because then we can hit the mat. You know, everybody who has a portable can listen to us, period. But, you know...
Pat?
I think we should keep the MP3s at least for a while, until we build up the numbers a little bit.
Link?
I think we should have them both myself, but... that brings the problem into view that we do not have space on the server for both of them.
Right. I personally, the tough part about this for me is I would rather just have all AUG, you know. And I agree with a lot of what Chris has and what other people have said, too. The only problem is I know there isn't a single player out there that's going to play our AUG files. And when you do get them encoded into a format that they'll play, nobody's going to be able to download them.
We'd be
able
huge.
We'd be able to host one show per month on the download because they end up being over 100 megs in size. So it's really rough to be able to play it on a portable MP3 player or a portable audio player. Now, I can take it and encode it into an MP3 myself from an AUG file, or, you know, because I have the master, I can encode it off the master for an MP3 file.
As far as that's concerned, you can listen to a wave. You got it.
Right. I can listen to the wave. I can listen to any format I want to. But that doesn't solve the problem for our listeners. I mean, I guess that's the big question. I would like to hear what our listeners think. You know, email us whether we should continue to support MP3 or just go straight AUG.
Put a poll up on the forums.
I could do that. I'd like to get either both. Send email. We'll put a poll up on the forum later, and
send us audio files. Your opinion.
Sound off on the chat room.
We'll play it on the air.
I see two for MP3. Do I have an AUG? Yes, I have an AUG. Two AUG right now.
Although the only thing I don't know whether we'd be able to do is to stream in AUG, because I'm not sure BenRev accepts AUG format for the stream. It might have to be MP3. I'm not sure. Maybe they'll re-encode it in the MP3 on their end. I don't know.
We got to find out.
Can't we stream in two different formats, though?
Like yeah, but we definitely have to test that prior to actual show day.
10 minutes before the show?
Because I don't know. I mean, we could try that, and I don't want it to crash in something because it's taxing. Because that is, you know, it's kind of an old machine. And it's running straight out of memory, so...
Brian says he would prefer WNV files.
Sure. For him, why not? You know what? We'll just... tonight's podcast feeds will just all be WAV. So, uncompressed, straight WAV file, and it'll just... tomorrow morning...
Eat up their drive.
Yeah. It'll eat up your drive. Only one or two people will be able to download at a time, and it'll take you all night. And I'm going to restrict the bandwidth to only, like, what? 28K upload.
You know?
Yeah. What was Mark saying yesterday? Oh, you said, why don't we just SCP it over to your box? That
right.
He's like, well, I only got 16K
up or something.
Yeah. Like, whoa. DSL was 16K up.
That's pretty bad.
So if you want to speak your mind, let us know. AUG or MP3 or both. Eventually somebody does have to make a stand, but the tough part of making a stand like that is you're going to end up excommunicating a lot of people. You're going to lose a lot of people, which is unfortunate, I would think, because they're going to say, well, if you're not going to put it on an MP3 format,
we're not going
to
listen.
I'm not going to waste my time because I can't listen to it on my MP3 player. Screw it. I quit.
That's the reality.
Unfortunately, that is the reality. And it's the same thing with media files, you know. Nobody out there, you go everywhere, they're either QuickTime or WMV. Some people put them out in multiple formats. But, you know.
Usually it's only one or the other.
Yeah, companies don't care. People don't care anymore. I care. All right.
Because you're so caring.
I care about everything. Now, we do have a guest tonight. Are we supposed to, do we have a time we're supposed to call him at?
Yes, 5 minutes ago.
5 minutes ago.
You got the number? It's on the email.
It is on the email. We're going to call. Wait, did you send? No, you sent that to the Tech Show email account,
yes.
Right? Yes. All right. We have a guest for tonight. Okay. Let's try this and see how it works. Do people even know who our guest is tonight?
No.
Oh, we should just let it as a surprise.
Let's just go.
Let me. I got a. Get a okay. Hold
you
on.
Got a busy signal.
No. Oh no! What's the code for the United States?
You're doing it. It's plus one.
It's plus one, right?
Yeah, plus one.
All right. Oh wait, did you put plus one in the mat?
No.
Okay.
You just need the plus one plus the area code.
Okay, plus one plus the area code.
And then the number. You're fine.
All right, we got it. Make sure that that's right. We don't want to call somebody by accident.
Crank call them.
Yeah. Hello? Well, you're on the...
Who are you? What do you want?
Does that look right, Alan?
It looks okay to me, but then I don't have the number.
He doesn't have the number in front of him.
You don't have the number in front of him. Way to bring the show to a halt. All right.
This is the technical difficulty show.
we're struggling on a phone number over here. This is it. There's the big one. Here we go.
Fire it up.
Wait, who's going to start talking to him? Oh, that's me.
It's you or Pat, one or the other.
I'm nervous.
Hello, Richard Stoney here.
Hey, Richard. This is Dan Washko from the GNU Linux Link Tech Show. How are you doing?
Well, I've got a cold these days, but aside from that, work's going okay.
That's fantastic. Well, I hope you feel better. You taking some zinc for that cold?
I've taken some cough medicine and various other things.
Ah.
Coldies works well, too.
Oh.
Hi, yeah. Richard. This is Pat Davila.
That's who? I can hardly hear you.
This is Patrick Davila. How are you?
Hello.
And we also...
Are we on the air yet?
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
We're streaming out live.
And
well, in that case, let's talk about something more important than my cold.
All right.
Something important to other people.
That's right. Well let's start off talking about that.
Let's start with the Free Software Foundation, all the wonderful work that you and your organization has been doing over the years, providing an innumerable amount of tools used for the GNU Linux operating system, GCC compiler, the debugger, Emacs, you know, the list goes on and on.
Actually, it's not just tools. We developed libraries, we developed games, we developed a graphical interface desktop called GNOME. And that was our third attempt to develop a desktop. By the way, I'm hearing an echo of my voice about 1 second delayed. which I can ignore, but are you getting an echo of that kind?
I don't think so.
No, not at all. We are not getting
an echo. Okay, well, then there's no real problem then. So our goal was to develop an entire operating system, an entire Unix-like operating system, which means you need utilities, you need tools, you need libraries, you need games, you need the kernel, you need all sorts of things. And in addition, I decided to go beyond what Unix had done at that time, which was 1984, and to add Windows system facilities. Now, as it happens, we didn't develop the Windows system because X Windows came along and we used that. But X Windows didn't do the whole job. X Windows enabled programs to display things in Windows, but it didn't contain the GUIs. So eventually we had to work on that. So developing an entire operating system is a coherent overall project. Whenever we could, we used some piece of free software that someone else had developed, because it wasn't crucial that every piece be written by us. What was crucial is that we have the whole system so we could live in freedom. And that's the really central part. You see, we didn't develop this operating system just to have fun. Well, we did have fun, most of us, but we developed it so because it was needed so we could live in freedom. It was the only way to use a computer in freedom. You have to escape from non-free software, because a non-free program is a program that doesn't respect your freedom. That's what's wrong with it. There's certain freedoms every user should always have. If a program doesn't respect those freedoms, then you're in trouble if you use it. But how could we use a computer and not use the non-free software? We had to replace it. We had to replace it with something, and that starts with an operating system. You can't make your computer do anything with no operating system, so the operating system had to be the first thing we did. Of course, nowadays, there are free operating systems. People are working on free software for loads of application purposes, and that's the way it should be. We should be able to do everything in freedom. So we've got to have free software for every job, but the operating system was the first thing we needed, and that's the reason for developing GNU. So every other operating system, as far as I know, has been developed either for a technical purpose or a commercial purpose. But GNU was developed for the sake of your freedom.
A noble cause.
Yeah, it is. It's very important. Now, originally you were working on Herd.
I wasn't working on Herd.
The GNU.
But the FSF was.
Yes.
The FSF started with hired an employee in late 1990 to start developing a kernel. But rather than have to develop the whole kernel ourselves, I made a decision that might have been a mistake. I decided we would use Mach, which was a funded project at Carnegie Mellon. People sometimes call it a microkernel. It was designed to be used as the base to emulate other kernels on top of. So I figured this way, we'd only have to do half the job, and that half would be developing user space programs so they'd be easier to debug, I thought. And this way, I thought we would get the job done sooner, because that was the main thing that was missing in order to have an operating system, so I wanted it ready sooner. Well, I don't know why, because I never actually worked on the code myself, but it took years to get the Herd to run at all. Now, maybe this is because the design I chose was a mistake. It also could be because Mach turned out to be less reliable than we hoped it thought it would be. The bootstrapping environment had some problems. Getting the debugger to work for multi-threaded programs was difficult. And it's also possible that the people developing the Herd aimed too much for perfection instead of for something that would run. I think that they actually rewrote some parts of it a couple of times based on what they learned, which would be fine for a research project, but isn't the way to get something running as fast as possible. So, anyway, fortunately, we got another kernel, and fortunately, its developer decided to make it free software. You know, Linux initially was not free software. In 1991, it was restricted in such a way that it couldn't qualify, but in 1992, he changed the license, and he happened to adopt a free software license, namely the GNU General Public License. So, and that's very lucky, because if he had not changed the license, but Linux had become popular as the kernel to use with GNU, it would have been a disaster. Anyway, because it was free, it wasn't a disaster. And so we didn't have to wait for the Herd, which was fortunate, since the Herd still doesn't run reliably enough.
Do you think that there will be a time when the Herd will be running reliably?
You know, how could I know? It probably depends on whether a few good hackers start to work on it intensively. People are working on it, but they're not working on it a lot of their time. Of course, it's not the most important thing, right? It's one piece of the system, and we do have a kernel that does the job.
Right, and it does a great job, with and the tools are, and libraries
are... Yeah, so it's not vital to get our kernel running, right? I'd sort of like it, but it's not the thing we need most in our community. For instance, right now we have two high-priority projects listed on GNU.org and on FSF.org. One of them is free displayer for Flash, and the other, which is a bigger project, is a free platform for Java. And these are things that will solve big problems for the community now.
So, working towards a free Java port, do you think do you think that Sun is going to be cooperative with that? And I mean, they've been batting around whether they're going to release Java in some kind of open license or not.
Well, obviously, I can't predict what they're going to do, but they made a big deal with Microsoft, and I suspect that part of that deal is that they're not going to cooperate with us in any way. When they released Solaris as free software, they chose a license incompatible with the GNU GPL. Now, there is speculation that they did this because Microsoft told them to. Obviously, that's just speculation. I don't know.
They had a settlement, and you know the details weren't released.
I couldn't hear you.
There was a recent settlement between Sun and Microsoft, and the details of the settlement weren't released. It was private.
You seem to be dropping out.
He said that the recent settlement between Sun and Microsoft, the details of that settlement were not released.
Yeah, so we suspect that part of it basically turns Sun into a tool for Microsoft to use against our community one way or another. But we'll see. You know, I don't want to start painting Sun as a monster and forcing Sun to act like a monster. I will hope that... that Sun would make the Java platform free, but we can't expect that, so we have to work on our own. And in the meantime, we have to teach the rest of the community, if you are writing a Java program, be careful. Don't develop it on Sun's platform, because if you do, then it will not be platform-independent software, because it will only run on Sun's platform. If you want it to be platform-independent, use a free Java platform to develop your program. And it will certainly also run on Sun's platform.
And the same can be said for Microsoft as well, right? Microsoft's platform, their Java platform.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think I find a lot of people who are developing their Java programs using Microsoft's platform. But practically speaking, the problem
thankfully,
that we encounter
yeah.
is that they develop on Sun's platform.
All right. You know what? I am really, honestly...
Are you still there?
Yeah. You can hear me, right?
Not always. There are dropouts in this line, I think.
Oh, I'm... can you turn up the mixer there? I am actually, you know, Java's great. I'm more interested in the GPL Flash project that you have.
You dropped out for a while. You said Java's blank, 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 Flash.
I said I'm interested in the Java, but I'm more interested in the Flash, the GPL Flash, that you project that you guys have resurrected. I think that's exciting.
Well, we didn't exactly resurrect it. I mean, we're just trying to help. We're trying to funnel more developers towards it. It's not our project.
Right. And I'm looking at that on your the gplflash.sourceforge.net page right now. And I think that's going to be a fantastic contribution.
I hope it will be.
I hope so, too.
But this, you see, both of these projects have been chosen to respond to serious problems. Because in the case of Java, there are programs, even free programs, that can't run on a free system. So they can't be part of the free world. And in the case of Flash, there are programs written in Flash, displays written in Flash, and we can't display them with free software. Now, both of these cause serious problems because many people want to run those Java programs or display those Flash movies, and because of that, they install non-free software. So these are both problems leading many people to accept domination, and thus, when you do that, you learn to think it's okay. So what these are really are is they're motors to teach people to think non-free software is okay. And that's so corrosive to the spirit of the free community that we've got to do something about the problem. Now, there are various things we've got to do. One is developing that software. If we can solve the problem technically, good. But also, at the same time, we have to educate people to recognize why non-free software is unethical so that they will have the strength to reject it even when it's tempting. We try to remove the temptation by providing free software to do the same job, but we can't expect always to keep the whole world free of all temptation. People have to have strength.
Do you think that's probably one of the biggest hurdles that the movement has to overcome? I mean, with people.
Absolutely. Because you'll find many people who are encouraging the use of free software, but they tend to call it open source instead, and they only cite practical advantages of it. They don't say that the alternative is unethical. So they will try to tell you that free programs probably work better, but they don't tell you that only free programs preserve your freedom. So they don't teach you any reason to reject non-free software. Continue.
Oh, I was going to say, that's probably the hardest part about getting people to understand free software, I find. That when you start talking about the ethical reasons, they kind of, their eyes gloss over, and they're like, well, let me just get to the work, you know?
But that's not always true.
It's not.
You're only dealing with geeks. But I deal with a lot of people who are not geeks. There are plenty of people who are not techies, but they love free software as an ethical idea.
There are
political activists who support the free software movement, even though they don't know how to program.
Right. I was talking from my experiences in the education environment in working with teachers, primarily teachers, to and providing them with tools that come from the free software movement, the GNU, some GNU tools that, you know, expose
them. You had a wrong dropout.
Teachers. I'm sorry. I'm coming from...
I guess it's a matter of dealing with those teachers. They must have so many dropouts.
No, I was saying that that work... I do my best to expose people to the GNU tools and other, you know, open license tools.
I don't do open.
Right, I know you don't do open, but I you know, some of the software that I'm able to provide them with, the GIMP, for instance.
That's free software.
Yes, and it's a fantastic utility. And when I you know, I try, in addition to not only providing them these tools, explaining why they're very important, and you know, the freedom that and the ethical reasons for using this software. It's not just about
if you make a recording of one of the times you try to explain this and send it to me, and I'll critique it. Because I find I can explain this and get it across maybe there's just certain techniques I've developed, and if I pointed them out to you, you could do it too.
Well, here's an idea. Why don't you take just a second and put in your own words the difference between the two, between the open source movement and the free software?
Oh, I already did. You know, the open source movement says this is advantageous software, but it doesn't say that there's an issue of right and wrong here. In the free software movement, the basic idea is, if the program isn't free, then it's denying you an essential freedom, and that's wrong. That software shouldn't exist, and we should escape from it. So we developed free software. We developed the GNU operating system so we could escape from software that didn't respect our freedom. That's the difference between those two movements. But that's not what I'm suggesting you explain to the teachers. The crucial point to explain to the teachers is just what the freedom is and why it's important.
Okay, and...
So, for instance, I tell them schools should be encouraging education. So when students reach the age of 14 or 15, some of them want to learn all about what's going on inside the computer. So when the student asks the teacher, how does this program do this? The teacher, if this program is proprietary, can only say, I'm sorry, I don't know. You're not allowed to know. Nobody in the school is allowed to know because it's all secret. And that's it. But with free software, education is possible. The computer teacher in a school can explain to the extent she knows, and then she can show the student the source code and say, read this and you will understand everything. And these students will devour it. And after they've read many programs' source code and tried adding features to these programs 20 times, by the time they graduate from high school, they will be very good programmers. And that's not the most important reason. That's reason number three. Reason number four is for moral education. Because schools are supposed to teach children to become good citizens, to have a good attitude towards other people. So starting in elementary school, the class should have a rule. Children, if you bring a program to class, you can't keep it for yourself. You must share it with the rest of the class. But the school has to follow its own rule, or it will just be a hypocrite and everyone will sneer at it. So the school has to bring only free software to class. That's to say, all the software that's here, we're sharing with you.
I see exactly what you're saying.
That makes perfect sense because then, you know, the children have some software that they can take home and use the same.
Yes.
You know, the same software
and
they're using at home at school.
And they're being taught to value freedom and cooperation. You see, schools that use proprietary software are bringing these children up to be addicts. When Microsoft donates gratis copies of non-free software to a school, it's not doing this because it loves children or wants to help education. It's doing this in the same spirit that tobacco companies used to hand out gratis packs of cigarettes. They want these people to grow up to be addicts, and then after they graduate, then they're going to be squeezed. Of course, nowadays, all public institutions in the U.S. are so corrupted, it's hard to imagine that schools, you know, if they can't reject junk food, which is perhaps bringing those kids up to be fat, how are they going to reject addicting software? But that's what they should do. If they want to contribute to a healthy society, they want to raise people, the next generation, to be people accustomed to freedom.
That's going to be... That's tough. It is a little tough because it's so ingrained.
It's tough because society is corrupt today.
I really like the analogy, though.
This is known as fascism.
Yeah, I really like the analogy, though, of comparing Microsoft to a crack pusher.
Well, tobacco companies is what I prefer.
I prefer crack pusher. It's not the same, you know. it's a good analogy.
Now, on that same vein here that we're talking about, of trying or convincing public institutions, particularly school districts, to adopt a free platform. There's been a lot of talk back and forth about the porting of free software over to non-free operating systems. In your opinion, and I think I already know your opinion, but for our audience, how do you feel about that?
Well, I don't think it's wrong. Using the non-free operating systems is wrong. But I don't think it's wrong to make free software run on them. Now, one thing that these ports do is they make it possible for people to try free software without giving up the non-free operating system yet. And that could be a stepping stone to moving to free software completely as a second step. And that often happens. On the other hand, people have told me, you know, several years ago, now that the GNU utilities work so well on Windows, I can no longer go to my boss and say that we have to get rid of it. Well, it's hard to measure how often it does the good and how often it does the harm. So the clear thing is we should focus on the thing that's clear, which is using non-free software is being part of an anti-social social system. So you shouldn't be using the non-free system. You should get rid of it. And so I urge people to defenestrate their computers. Either throw Windows out of your computer or throw your computer out the window.
Oh. Oh, yeah, that is true.
Richard, changing gears right here, one of the biggest threats to the free software movement is patents, as well as lawsuits related to the patent issue. What can we do to take a stand against this?
There's not much we can do in the U.S. You see, the U.S. has this completely stupid legal system where any computational technique can be patented. Well, of course, a large program combines thousands of computational techniques, and any one of them might be patented. So probably hundreds of them are patented by hundreds of different patents, which means if you write a large program, you're infringing hundreds of patents, and you've got to expect sooner or later to be attacked. I just saw news that there's a free instant message program. Capito,
Copete
was just attacked with patents, and according to the message I got, they had discontinued its distribution. So this is a sign of what we face. they were talking about three different patents that they had been attacked with,
and that's starting to crop up all over. I mean, in the United States and in Europe.
Europe is still having a legislative battle, about whether to allow software patents at all. The U.S. never had a legislative battle about this. It was decided by a court decision, which may have been misinterpreting a Supreme Court decision, but in any case, it was never a legislative issue. It was just imposed on us. But in Europe, there's been a sufficient fight.
And hopefully that fight will not be lost.
I hope so. It looks like it's going to be... by July, we may have lost or we may have prevented a final decision. It's up to the European Parliament now to have a vote on this.
On a similar thing with software patents, I've been listening to a lot of IT conversations lately, and one thing that keeps coming up is companies trying to go after the developers of particularly peer-to-peer software, and with the new hardware...
You're dropping out.
I'm sorry. Companies trying to go after the developers of peer-to-peer software, making them responsible for any illegal activity that might take place using such software. And also, the recording industry and the motion picture industry are really trying to target the hardware manufacturers and embedding flags and stuff into the devices.
It's tyranny.
Yeah, to prevent you from using the device in not only just an illegal manner, but in a legal way.
Like BitTorrent, you know, distributing.
Well, the laws are unjust anyway. It's completely illegitimate to stop people from sharing copies of any published work. What can we do? It's an illustration of the fascist system that we live in. The American Heritage Dictionary has this definition of fascism, a system of government that exercises a dictatorship of the extreme right, typically through the merging of state and business leadership together with a belligerent nationalism. Now, this all more or less fits the Bush regime.
Richard, if I could just jump in, you should talk to my mother. She grew up in fascist Spain, and she could tell you stories.
I can't hear you.
My mom grew up in fascist Spain, you know, under Franco, and, you know, it was a place where people disappeared in the middle of the night. We haven't reached that yet.
Well, actually, some people did. In 2001, hundreds of people disappeared, and the U.S. government refused to say where they were. And the U.S. government now has hundreds of prisoners in prisons outside the U.S. and won't say who they are, and some of them are being tortured, and some are killed. I read recently that a Haitian refugee who had a visa to enter the U.S. and who came to the U.S. and asked for political asylum was put in prison, and in prison he was denied his medicine, and he died in 4 days. That was recently. I could look up his name if you want.
We can, well, why don't we move on to some other stuff? Bring it back to the Free Software Foundation. Because what you're bringing up is very, very relevant, but we're deviating from the technology aspect of it. But it does all tie together. You're right.
I read today that Tom DeLay was basically selling his votes. It's been proved, you know, there's documentary evidence. He was selling votes on various issues to companies that would contribute to his PAC. And these laws, such as the DMCA, were voted on basically for sale to corporate interests. That's how we get these unjust laws.
So is, particularly with the DMCA and the potential for, well, we have the software patent mess that we're in now and potentially in Europe, is there any way to reverse this? Is there a way to...
Well, if we had political will to do so, I'm sure it could be done. The problem is that with politics so completely dominated by business, well, the mega corporations like software patents because they cross-license with each other, and so they avoid most of the problem, and it gives them a sort of control and dominion over the whole field. So they are not going to tell their congressmen and senators to solve this problem. They're lobbying on the other side.
I think,
and the U.S. government is, too. I was told in India by somebody very close to the Indian software industry that the pressure for software patents in India was coming primarily from the U.S. government. Now, when there's a problem in the U.S. government does not try to solve the problem. Instead, it tries to impose the same problem on the rest of the world.
And that is a big problem.
So, sure is.
So then,
if I knew how to solve it, I'd be the greatest hero in the world.
I think as long as people realize that, you know, GNU Linux is the greatest operating system, they will switch eventually. It's just a matter of time.
That's probably true if we are not blocked from offering the features they want. it won't be the greatest operating system if it can't do X, Y, and Z that they want. For instance, right now you can't use GNU/Linux to play a DVD. And the reason you can't is, well, at least you can't legally find anyone distributing the software you could do this with. And so that makes it, from many people's point of view, a bad system. Now, the question is, where you place the blame? Do you place the blame on us, or do you place the blame on the U.S. government?
And that is a great problem. I mean, granted, you're right. You really can't place the blame on the GNU Linux community because the tools are there. They are there, but
right.
We're not permitted to use them.
People who know that and people who look at it in ethical terms will immediately see the blame falls on the U.S. government. But not everybody's going to know this, and not everybody's going to pay attention. There are people who will just look at it in a shallow, short-term, practical way and say, I want to play DVDs on my computer. I don't care why. I'll use Windows.
Right, and that, or Apple.
Either one, they're both non-free.
And that, there's probably a huge crux of the problem, that it's convenient to go down to Walmart or Staples and buy my Windows box, and then I can play all my DVDs I want.
Yes, and so, of course, when we're legally forbidden to serve the public, we can't serve the public as well.
And that stinks.
It absolutely does. It's another injustice piled on the previous injustices.
Just to play devil's advocate here.
Which side's going to win this battle? We're just going to keep fighting.
Just to play devil's advocate for a second, like, what's wrong with creating a piece of software and trying to get paid for it?
Nothing is wrong with that. That, per se, has nothing wrong with it. The question is,
well, doesn't that's then proprietary software, which isn't free?
What?
But that then is proprietary software, which isn't free.
Not necessarily. No, that's not doesn't follow. Remember, free software means that the user has certain essential freedoms. It's not an issue of price. That's why we say think of free speech, not free beer. It has nothing to do with money directly. It may have indirect consequences that affect how much money this one or that one ends up with, but it's not about money.
Okay, so if I own a corporation who wrote a DVD encryption software and created a DVD standard, wouldn't I then have, you know, wouldn't I be well within my rights to decide who can and who cannot?
I don't
you know,
think
use
so.
My encryption algorithm to decrypt it.
When things are published, they should be published in documented, freely implementable standards so that everyone can implement them. I don't think that just because you wrote something that entitles you to total power over everyone using it, whether that's a program or a format specification or whatever it might be, or a song or a novel. People are entitled to certain freedoms, not always the same for everything, but people are entitled to certain freedoms, and anyone who doesn't respect those freedoms is attacking the public. And the whole basis of the free software movement is to defend ourselves.
Right, but what I'm trying to drive toward here, Richard, is that there has to be a distinction. I know where you're coming from, but I'm trying to make the distinction between being able to write something or create something and have ownership of that and ownership of that
there's no such principle at
product.
All. If you look at the reason why there is copyright law in the U.S., it is stated explicitly why in the Constitution, and it doesn't say so that people can have some kind of ownership. It says to promote progress. So it's a public purpose. Our legal system traditionally rejects utterly the idea that you were just saying to me.
The idea that you can own something?
Absolutely. The idea that somebody who writes something is entitled to control it was rejected when our Constitution was written. And the publishers have been trying to pull the wool over people's eyes ever since.
Okay, how are they trying to pull the wool over our eye? I mean, we have an established...
The Constitution says
we have
that
an established system for copyright.
Exists to serve the purpose of promoting progress. But the publishers would like you to think it serves the purpose of giving them a privilege. And that was rejected by the Constitution. The Constitution authorizes a copyright system, but says that its purpose is to benefit the public, not to benefit any private specific party.
So in the case of DVD encryption, you can develop a DVD encryption, and whereas copyright, which is supposed to benefit the public, if you exclude a portion of the public, you're not benefiting the public. If you make it illegal for them to use.
Copyright law never gave them the power to stop anybody from making another DVD player. But remember, traditionally, there was no issue like that. Books were published with letters on paper, and you didn't need a machine to read them.
Okay, so what we have now is in this situation right now, is you don't have a choice. It's if you want to watch that DVD legally, you have to purchase from that company or a company who has made a deal to be able to
watch. Or you could find somebody who will illegally distribute a copy of DECSS to you. It's not illegal for you to have a copy, but it's illegal to distribute copies. Of course, lots of people do it anyway, but they can't do it very publicly. So unless you know somebody, you might have trouble finding a copy.
Right. But the point of the matter is it should not be illegal to distribute that.
Absolutely not. The law that made that illegal is a completely unjust law that has no moral authority. It's a sign of the fact that laws in this country are for sale.
One of the big issues that's happening is going to be the broadcast flag starting in July. Basically, what this is going to stop is people from recording shows and playing it on one machine, playing on another machine. What's the difference?
That was the idea. Although it's not clear that the current broadcast flag regulation applies to software-controlled radios. So at the moment, GNU Radio can still be used to do this.
Right. But it's still, it is an infringement on our rights.
Absolutely. That's another injustice, and it came from the same place.
I mean, one of the things that has always been upheld, and you hear a lot in this type of when this type of argument comes up, is particularly with when the VCRs came out and Sony and everybody went and said, hey, look, the broadcaster said, you can't allow the VCRs to record because that's going to steal away our business model and we're going to lose all this economic infrastructure that we have in place.
Back then, they had less power, and the court made a decision not based on trying to do whatever business wants, but now they have a lot more power, so they've been able to pass laws changing the situation, and they threaten to pass more.
And this looks like it's going to probably be the turning point of those type of freedoms. When they implement,
we don't know what's going to happen. Freedom is really thick all around the world. I visited Morocco last December, and I heard that the current king had established a lot of human rights. But then the U.S. government went to him and said, you've established too many rights for accused people. You should take away some of those rights. Whether freedom is going to survive at all is in doubt, but we've got to try.
Absolutely. We got to keep fighting.
Now, a lot of businesses would make the argument that if we give this freedom, if we allow the people these freedoms, what we're going to end up having is rampant piracy.
Piracy is attacking ships, and it really has very little to do with computers.
Right, but we're going to have people making illegal copies of DVD, selling them on the street to their neighbors for a penny, and there goes all our
revenue. Think that they will sell these copies on the street for a penny. They'll probably just share them on the net.
Well, even if, I mean, really, they seem to be making such a big stink about it. Is it? Do you really think it's as rampant as they're claiming it to be?
I hope so, because it's perfectly legitimate and extremely useful to share copies, and people deserve the right to share copies of any published work.
Okay.
No government can legitimately take away that freedom from anyone.
So you wouldn't be opposed of any of your published works, you know, just being passed out for free?
Absolutely not. In fact, they all explicitly say that that's permitted. Because it would be wrong for me not to.
In that kind of model, how does a business, for instance, the Motion Picture Association...
How does anybody make any money?
Money through books being sold. That's commercial copying.
Yeah, but
if this is a book of fiction, for instance...
But here's the problem, Richard. If you write a book and you make it free on the web and free on every street corner, you're not going to sell it.
I don't know what you mean by free on every street corner, because there aren't computers on
street
corners.
If you're passing it out on the web... Well, okay, for instance...
People often buy printed copies of books, and having copies available on the net increases sales.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that.
I've heard that too, but I've never seen really any proof of it. You know what I mean?
Well,
I can understand both points.
That's what happened to him.
Right. I can understand both points, and I can see where it would be advantageous to be able to access a copy of a book that you have on the web. I mean, I do that myself.
But in any case, as I see it, this is an ethical issue. There's simply no legitimate possibility of taking away this freedom. Somebody might, you know, to restrict commercial use of fiction or art can be legitimate. But to restrict people from sharing with each other is simply wrong. That's too far to go just to encourage a business model.
So then, what we're looking at here is what you're saying is, even though you make it free, available to free for everybody to share, you're still going to have an economic revenue because people are going to buy it.
Probably, because that seems to be the case. People who share music don't entirely stop buying records. People who can get e-books don't stop buying printed books.
But can you see the point?
If movies are shared on the net, there will still be movie theaters. That's commercial use. There'll still be TV broadcasting. That's commercial use. So those things would still be covered by a reasonable copyright system for art and fiction.
Unless, of course, you take that movie that you downloaded across the web and then invite 40 of your closest friends to come watch it in your house on your big screen TV for nothing.
But a lot of people like to go to theaters.
I hate it personally.
A lot of people would rather have the free MPEG file, you know. They're losing money.
After all, a lot of people go to theaters when they don't have to. So I think you've got a skewed picture of what people want.
I think it's both cases. I mean, I love to go to the movie theater, and I see that it's more than just going to the movies to watch the movie. It's, you know, the whole experience.
Exactly. Not everybody feels that way, but it doesn't matter if everyone feels that way. A lot of people do.
That's true.
Sure. Well, all right. Well,
now,
even at a 50-50 with some people feeling that way and some people not feeling that way, half the time you're going to be losing revenue,
right? The people who feel that way go to the theater. That's income for the movie maker. Now, one thing you should realize is publicity for a movie costs more than making the movie.
This is true.
So if their income went down by half, all they'd have to do is less advertising.
And that's a good thing, because nobody likes advertising anyhow.
So hype.
Exactly. So the point is, the idea that giving people the freedom to share would cause this disaster where artists or companies couldn't get any income is based on exaggeration. And you shouldn't participate in that exaggeration. It's a distorted picture of reality that you spread. And the problem is, it's not just a harmless mistake. That particular mistake feeds the campaign to take away our freedom. In fact, it's spread by the campaign to take away our freedom.
The Motion Picture Association, you know, the motion picture industry, they survived fine before video or DVD was around.
Certainly.
I'm afraid I couldn't hear any of that.
The movie industry was fine before there was even video or DVD. They worked back then, and they will work if there wasn't any DVD or video.
Yeah, I mean, they keep saying the sky's going to fall, and it keeps not falling.
I think it's the difference between, you know, $200 billion and $50 million.
Well, yeah, they want to make more money. More and more, I'm still not satisfied.
Well, it's greed.
Sure.
The person who dies with the most money, who has the most toys, that's the way.
You can't take it with you. That's the bottom line.
Hey, right. Richard, I know
I
we're...
Think
go ahead.
It's the one who dies having done the most for other people's freedom and happiness.
Sure.
Is the one who wins, is anyone wins.
I have a couple of quick questions for you, Richard, because I know everybody knows you talk a lot about your involvement with the Free Software Foundation and GNU and things like that. Some people don't really know what your character is like, though. And I had a couple requests today of questions to ask you about, just personal questions, so they know more what you're like. Like, people want to know what kind of music you listen to and
well, let's see. I tend to like Balkan folk dancing and Turkish music and I like Spanish folk music of some kinds and Scandinavian modern folk-derived music. And I like Irish folk music when it's fast and dancey. Mm-hmm. And I like some avant-garde kinds of music from the U.S. I like the classical music of Java and Bali, gamelan music. I like classical music from countries like Cambodia and Thailand. I love Vietnamese music. I like Japanese folk dance music, and I also love Japanese court music, which is about 1,300 years old and have become very strangely, majestically slow. It's called Gagaku.
You travel a lot.
Yes, but I got to like a lot of these kinds of music before I started traveling.
Okay, and one other quick question. What sort of things do you like to do, like, in your free time, when you're not battling with, you know...
Well, I have so little of
the enemies
that
of
I almost don't know. But I like to read, and...
Anything in particular?
I wish I had a sweetheart.
Oh. Have you tried online dating?
We all wish you had a sweetheart, Richard.
There's no...
What kind of stuff do you like to read? Do you like fiction, nonfiction, historical stuff?
I like some kinds of fiction. I also like history and anthropology and science.
Oh. You know what? Maybe we could extend out to our listeners. We could find you a sweetheart.
It is theoretically conceivable.
Well, we'll hold a contest for you, Richard.
Well, you can, rather than holding a contest, why don't you take all two entrants and just forward their messages to me?
There we go. Now
they can look at my personal ad on Stallman.org, and that would give them a better idea if they want to enter at all.
Could be a win a date with Richard Stallman contest, something like that.
No, much better to give me a chance to meet each of them, because the chances that I'd hit it off well with any particular person are so small.
I see.
Wow. Hey, you like to dance, though, don't you? You like to listen to a lot of the folk music and.
Well, you see, I used to love folk dancing, but I have a tendon injury which will never get better.
Oh, that stinks.
It really does.
Well, now, did you do that? Did that happen? That injury occur when dancing, or?
I don't think so. when I noticed it suddenly start to hurt, I was actually using a Nordic track.
Ah. Wow.
And there you have it, folks. What can happen when you're listening to Japanese folk music while using a Nordic track?
Now, do you...
I wasn't listening be
warned.
To any music. I was just exercising.
That's really it. That stinks. Because I know that... Now, are you able to use continue to exercise then? I mean, do you...
No, I travel so much, the idea is ridiculous.
Oh. Oh, that would be true then. Now, where do you like to travel? What part of the world do you like to travel in the most?
I go to places where I'm invited.
No, but I mean, like, if you could go anywhere in the world just to take a vacation, what part of the world do you enjoy the most? Do you have a particular...
Well... I like different parts of the world for different reasons. For instance, I love being in Bangalore at times when they're having a lot of performances of Indian classical music and dance, because I love that.
Okay. So you like to go to places and get exposed to their native culture and just be
able... Well, it depends. I like some cultural activities and not others.
Okay.
I like to try them out, and if I like them, then I want to do more. There are places I like to go because the food is wonderful.
Oh, that's true. I can understand that. Like, what is one of your... what cuisine would you say, like, if you could think of something right off the top of your head, what cuisine do you prefer, or do you think is, like, really
outstanding? I could never choose one. You won't find me having a single favorite whatever, because I can't put them in a linear scale. You know, Chinese food is wonderful. Japanese food is wonderful in a different way. Spanish food is wonderful in a different way.
That's true. That is true. It is hard to pick.
Let me ask you, do you run any particular distribution of GNU Linux?
At the moment, my machine is still running Debian, but I can't really recommend Debian to the general public because their server has non-free programs available on it. So the system that we're starting to recommend now is called Ubuntu.
Where's that from?
Which is developed in Argentina. However, it seems that its support for English has some bugs, so I hope the next version will do that well.
Huh. And now, what's the name of that again? Could you spell that?
Ubuntu. Ubuntu.
All right.
We'll have to check it out.
Definitely.
And it's a distribution developed by people who are strongly committed to free software. That's why I can recommend it. Because I'm not recommending any non-free software when I recommend Ubuntu.
That's true. Well, that would be definitely something to check out. Richard, we have to get going. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your viewpoints and a little bit of your personal information.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much for your time. I'm really appreciative of it. I enjoyed it very much.
Happy hacking.
Yeah,
same to you.
Same to you, and happy GNUing.
Absolutely. Great interview. Thank you very much, Richard.
Bye.
Cheers.
And I hope you feel better. Hope you get
the cold will get better one of these weeks.
Great. And you get some rest, and maybe we can talk to you again in the near future.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
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 That was I enjoyed it.
And that is that. How's that for a surprise interview for you?
Surprise.
Richard Stallman pops up on our show.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. We got 9 minutes left. Do we want to
crank out a song? I think that I deserve a round of applause because I bit my tongue the whole time. And these guys will attest that I was over here smacking my microphone.
You were itching over there, man.
And, squeezing my fist and stuff like that because I don't hold exactly. Let me say that I do agree with Richard very much on his issues on his software stuff.
Me too.
There's a couple of weird things that he has that I think his ideas are a little weird in some spots. But for the most part, I agree with him a lot. My only problem with Richard is a political one. I don't share his political
agreed
views. So,
you know what?
I mean, Dan was over there, like, you know, scratching himself, going, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love Richard Stallman. So what we're going to do is after the show, Pat and Alan and I are going to hogtie Dan, and we're going to put some lipstick on him.
We're going to rape him.
And we're going to stick a little long hair, you know, one of the long hair wigs on him, and tie him up and box him up and ship him to Richard. And they should get along really well.
You know what?
They both like to travel.
This is I'll send him a picture of you, Dan.
Thank
I know
you.
Just the one.
You know what? I've never spoken to Richard before.
Neither
I've only read his stuff and heard, you know, third party reference to him. You know, and my biggest thing was we got him on today. I was concerned. You know, with any guest, I don't want to offend him. I don't want to, you know, upset him, particularly someone like Richard Stallman, who is pretty big in the community. And I was kind of concerned because he does have a very, very strong opinion, and he lives his life
agreed
according to his philosophy.
Exactly. He walks the walk.
And he did have a lot of requests and demands of us that we make in order for him to come on. And the whole time I'm thinking about this and the cloud of all these demands was that I don't want to say something that's going to have him go, well, F you guys and hang up.
Oh, I was hoping he would.
But, you know, because I didn't want
to. Either way, he likes
you
like that.
I didn't want to, you know, have that kind of like, I don't know, disrespect. But I got the opinion that, you know, I would love to talk to him again. I think that he would not be the kind of guy that's just going to go, he'll argue with you.
Exactly. He'll talk
it
out and he'll argue with you the whole time. Point by point.
I'd like to learn more about, I'd like to hear more about the, you know, not just the free song. I'd like to hear more about Richard Stallman.
Sure. Well, that's why I asked him the personal questions.
That was great.
I was hoping that he would answer those, too, because it doesn't really give you much insight if you only hear, like, their philosophy on things and not what they're like as a regular person. You know what I mean? He's had a long time to work out his speeches on his philosophy of free software and stuff like that. But when you ask somebody, you know, what kind of music do you like and, you know, do you eat pizza? It kind of humanizes them a little
it down
bit, you know?
It's not exactly the question you'd be expecting.
Right. But, again, I think it was overall, it was a pretty good interview.
It was. We respect Richard a lot and the work that, you know, the Free Software Foundation has done in the past. There wouldn't be Linux without the GNU Foundation.
That's true.
And that is
true.
The truth.
Yep. That's very true.
And, you know, that's great. And I really appreciate him coming on. We got 6 minutes. You know what? Should we talk talk about the reverse of free software? And that is commercial software. And what happens when you pirate commercial software?
Let's hear the story, Dan.
Here we go. Dan's been dying to tell
this
story.
This is a great story. Well, it's not really, you know, it's a tragic story. But
an interesting story.
This is why you should not use illegal copies of software, particularly in your work environment. Because eventually, there's a good chance you're going to get caught.
Absolutely, you'll get audited.
I know somebody who did get caught. And boy, did they get into a hell of a lot of trouble, and they lost their job. What this person had done, and I don't want to, you know...
Name names,
and I don't want to... You know, I got to be careful with that. But apparently, they took old licenses of Novell. Licenses that weren't being used anymore.
From their old job?
From a place of... a business was an old job. It was when you move to another version of Novell, you throw out your licenses.
He kept them
and took them to his new place and started using them there. And somehow he got busted. I don't know how it happened, but he got caught. And now he no longer has a job. And I don't know the full extent of the...
Well, his employer is could possibly be sued now.
It's a possibility. And what this ends up happening is, what you have to realize is, it's not only you. If you're pirating or using illegal software, it's not only you on the line. It's your employer.
It's the whole
everybody that works there.
Yep.
Well,
it's their livelihoods.
Right. It's where you pirated the software from, where you copied it. They're on the line, too.
Let me tell you a little bit about something that I read at the BSA, at bsa.org, is that if you pirate software, if you knowingly, as a systems administrator, if you knowingly put pirated software on your computers at work, not only is your workplace liable for that software, but you can be held directly liable as well. And I forget the tune of the money they were talking, but it was substantial enough for me to notice. You know what I mean?
Right. And
so that is possible. And like, you know, by the same token, if your company, if you're working for a company and they say, you know, just put this copy of this software on there and you know it to be not a legal copy, a pirated copy of the software, you can be held financially liable for that personally.
Absolutely.
So do beware
and don't do it, of
that kind of stuff, and, you know, tell them no. And, you know, if for some reason that did happen and they gave you a crap about it, you know, sue them. They can't get rid of you for telling them that you're not going to steal. But,
because the only thing that ends up coming out of that is you could lose your job, you could get serious fines, jail time. It's going to affect your family. It's going to affect everybody you work with.
Yep, and their families.
And their families and the business. It's just not worth it.
Absolutely not.
It is not worth it. No piracy. No.
Don't bend over in the shower after you do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Buggery on the high
shoes. No picking up the soap, man. If it falls, you're done.
And honestly, you don't have to worry about piracy if you're using free software.
Absolutely. And it runs better.
It does.
And if you're not on a boat.
Yeah.
Nothing against boats.
One Piece.
Arg.
Oh, man. We got to start wrapping things up. We have 2 minutes before we have to close off.
So Dan, you're gonna encode that file so that's 100 megs, so when it hits /dot tomorrow, all those people will be bitching about it?
You know what? I should put it out in WAV format. Yeah. No, there'll be... You know, just a quick note.
I can't wait to see the comments.
Is there almost wasn't, almost lost the AUG for last week? What had happened? You know that we screwed up, or I screwed up at the beginning, and I left the music playing. So the first like 5-10 minutes of the show was unintelligible.
It was just music.
Right, but you could barely hear us under it. What had happened was when I had it in Audacity over here, and I went to encoded into a wave. I didn't save it like I usually do. And when we would say goodbye to you guys, I came back up here. My machine was back at the login prompt. Something happened, and at that point, you have to recover the Audacity file off the bits and pieces. But I went to Audacity's website. There was a guy there who posted that. All he did was he used socks to convert all the Audacity files into raw files, and then he used cat to put them all together, re-imported them back into Audacity, and he was good to go. And I did that exact same process, and it worked beautifully. The only thing I didn't do was bump up the volume.
Increase the volume so people could hear it, yeah.
So what I did, though, I don't know. Actually, the MP3 that I put up there was derived from the same thing. I put up a second one called B.
Right.
And so if you got the MP3... that night, you probably got another one the next day.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, so it was two. Then the same thing with the AUG, but I didn't rename the AUG.
I
redid the AUG audio because people were complaining it was so low, and then I just bumped it up there so everybody else who got it after that got a better copy. So if you want a better copy of last week's AUG file, it's up there now, so the audio should be better. But definitely, please, let us know how the audio sounds on these files that you've downloaded, if it's improved.
We should be good tonight.
Hopefully.
Because we have our regular recording going.
I think we're finally starting to work the bugs out of the new setup.
New mixers going on.
But
we're pretty good.
All right. We got to wrap it up. It's getting down to the wire of 30 seconds left on BinRev. We say our goodbyes. Thank you to Richard for coming on. Thank you to Pat for making it all possible.
No problem, man.
And for putting up the write-up of the show. I got to make sure I get the chat log.
Yes, you do.
That won't be a problem. And thank you all for listening to us. Give us your feedback. And Alan, you send us out.
This show, episode 79.
79, cool. Just play the music, man. We got to cut it off.
Thanks for listening.
We're out of here. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
dun 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 dun.
Keep going dun 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 because I gotta find a stupid show. Dun dun
dun dun. Gotta change it because I don't think we're allowed to do that. I don't think we're allowed to do that.
Okay.
Okay, come on, hit us with it.
It's trying. There we go.
Thank you.
Good night.
Linux Link Tech Show.